across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And time for our guest this morning. I don't think you need me to tell you that it's been another tumultuous week in politics. We've already been talking about that, of course, this morning. Even those of us who are not interested in politics particularly have been rushing to the radios and news sites to find out what's been going on this week. Because we understand that the decisions that they're going to be taking affect all of us. Now, it's just over 3 weeks since Heidi Allen resigned from the Conservative Party and joined the Independent Group, along with fellow Tories Anna Soubry and Selah Williston. The resignations, of course, caused a furore, with strong opinions being voiced for and against. So I'm now joined by Heidi Allen. Heidi, thank you very much for joining us. How long did it take you to make up your mind to resign from the Conservative Party? Was there one defining moment, or was it just lots of things?
I mean, it kind of grew over time. I'd been getting increasingly uncomfortable with the way the government were handling the Brexit negotiations, you know, particularly exacerbated when you represent a heavily Remain constituency. You know, you're looking for your constituents for a sense that you're being listened to. Mm-hmm. And that became increasingly obvious that we weren't, and our views as the 48% weren't. But also for me, it's the government's approach to welfare. You'll know, I'm sure, that I've been a member of the Work and Pension Select Committee since I was elected in 2016. Yes. And it shouldn't have been so hard. You know, I've got to the point where I was having to take a camera crew out with me to visit food banks up and down the country to prove to the government that universal credit needs to change. And so it wasn't a single moment in time, but the dawning realization kind of creeps up on you that which I joined was different. And then when colleagues started to express similar feelings and we learned about the opportunity to try and do something differently, it just felt like the right thing to do.
And speaking of the austerity, you've been on an austerity tour, haven't you, around the UK over the last few weeks? And I think you're just back from Glasgow. I was looking on Twitter and seeing you in Glasgow. Have you been shocked or surprised at what you've found in any way?
It's been a mix. In some ways, it's been depressingly predictable. And that was part of my choice of the locations we went to. I deliberately wanted rural, coastal, city, high employment, low employment, because I had a horrid feeling that the issues that we'd discover would be the same regardless, and they are. You know, mm-hmm. the benefits freeze, the five-week wait, the way universal credit as a machine is impenetrable if you're not IT savvy and you've got credit on your phone, and, you know, it's very impenetrable, and a real computer says no. That was the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. But what I have been shocked to learn is the... You know, a lot of people maybe have an assumption about the kind of people that are on welfare or end up on welfare. But I remember in one of our visits to East London, we were in Poplar, and we met a young mum who was a biochemist, who had a really great job with a pharmaceutical company, and a chap who was an IT software engineer working for one of the big banks in Canary Wharf. And both of them, because of health issues, had ended up losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, from a skills and a CV point of view, now you can't imagine that they could have ended up in losing their homes, losing their families, because the welfare state had let them down so badly. So that was a real shock and an eye-opener that, you know, this can affect everybody and anybody. Yeah. And that tells you fundamentally that the way the welfare system is operating at the moment just isn't fit for purpose.
Yeah. It's people you don't expect to be in it, but they do need it in these moments of crisis. And if it's not there, then that must be a real problem for them.
Absolutely.
The Independent Party, is it likely to form into a political party as we understand it? And I mean, you know, with a leader and a manifesto and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. It needs to be all of those things. We've had our first meeting with the Electoral Commission, who's, you know, it's quite an onerous process you go through to formally register as a party, because, of course, they want to check that things like governance around how you handle yourself financially and standards of conduct and things like that. There's quite a big approval process to go through, so we started the process of that. But also, the other thing that we want to do a little bit differently, we're very conscious of not just being another party like all the others, and if we're going to be different, then our manifesto and the way we build policy has to be different. So our plan, which we're putting together at the moment, essentially, we're calling it the Change Politics Project, and it will involve a bus. It won't be red, and it won't have 150 million on the side of it.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
the bus stories don't always end well. But our plan is to do a tour of the country, literally, you know, Glasgow, let's talk about education. Cardiff, let's talk about health. I don't know, Chelmsford, let's talk about social care policy. And we're going to go out and we're going to talk to people, to academics, to experts, professionals in that field, to people themselves who've experienced that area of policy. And we're going to build a manifesto very, very differently. Mm-hmm. And that takes time. So much as we would like to snap our fingers and be in a fully formed party tomorrow, we'd rather do it properly. But we have to do that over sort of late spring, summer, so that autumn, that sort of period, we hope to be there as a fully fledged party.
Ah, interesting. Do you think in Parliament that there's a partisan situation leading to politicians putting the good of the party before the good of the country?
Absolutely, and everybody can see that. Brexit has highlighted that as clear as the nose on your face, because, you know, good politicians are voting against their consciences and against what they know is the best interest of their country in order to preserve their party line or party unity. And Brexit has blown that model wide apart. It just doesn't work at times of national crisis, mm-hmm. let alone in peacetime when you're building regular quality policy. And it's shown that they're not fit for purpose. And it disappoints me greatly when that happens. And I suppose that's one of the frustrations I had. It wasn't just about whether the Conservative Party had moved away from that which I joined, but also just the way of doing politics.
Yeah.
Now, I remember thinking it from day one when I first had my first day at Westminster. I thought, you know, this is UK PLC. This is going to be, you know, the best business in the country. It'll have the best minds and the best communicators. And actually, quiet party loyalty gets you promoted, not expertise. And that really, really disappointed me. So it's an opportunity to build something that's more functional and more competent for the country. So it's
a better model. Now, there are those, of course, that have said that you and your colleagues should call a by-election in your constituencies because you're no longer aligned to the party that you stood for. How do you respond to that?
And you're right, that is a question that is asked of us, although interestingly, and every seat is, of course, different. But I can genuinely say, hand on heart, the response in South Cams has been overwhelmingly supportive. And not wanting me to do that. I've had at the last count about 2,500 positive emails and 41 unhappy. And mm-hmm. I had a public meeting at Long Road, Long Road College this morning, and the room was exactly of that opinion. But I suppose I kind of feel like I know how my constituents feel about it. But in pure terms, there are a couple of reasons why I think a by-election isn't the answer. And I do really genuinely do understand why some people think this is something that as 11 should do. I mean, first and foremost, we're on the edge of the biggest decision and the biggest risk for this country in generations, the culmination of the Brexit vote process. To have 11 of us out of the game and not part of influencing in Parliament for their possible route forward out of Brexit, I think would be disastrous for the country. We don't need more instability.
Mm-hmm.
And then just on a practical level, you know, we haven't changed, but the transformation of the Conservative Party, even since 2015 when I was first elected, and I think the referendum changed things immeasurably. You know, who are the group of people that the Prime Minister, every single time, despite them being the ones calling a vote of no confidence in her, who has she gone back to convince them of her withdrawal agreement approach? It's the ERG.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right wing of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been time after time ignored, not valued, not welcomed. And that tells me that the party has now gone in a completely different direction and isn't the one. You know, the party is now, the party of business, whipped for no deal this week.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't imagine that. So, you know, I feel comfortable looking myself in the mirror. You know, I haven't changed the things that I stood on in 2015 and 17, the values and the, you know, I mean, half the manifesto hasn't been delivered. But mm-hmm. the things that I stood on, they haven't changed at all. And my constituents broadly seem to support me in that conclusion.
Do you think the ERG is a party within a party and should be separated from the Tories like the militant tendency was in Labour years ago?
Well, when Anna, Sarah and I were still fighting from within the party, that's absolutely right. And I would say there's probably a third of the parliamentary party that agree with us. because if you look at the vote just recently on whether extending Article 50 by 3 months, a modest extension, two-thirds of the Conservative Party voted against that government motion. About two-thirds.
Yeah.
That's a very right-wing. So while we were there, yes, we were fighting, saying the ERG, this is now, it's you, Blue Kit, we called it, they should be a separate party. But the Prime Minister and the party chairman and those that run the party refused to tackle it and pandered to them, have developed a Brexit strategy along their lines of preference. So that tells us that the fight is over. That is now the party.
Yeah.
It's no longer the party within the party. That is now the mainstream view, which is why, you know, we're no longer welcome.
Mm-hmm. And a final question. Are other MPs lined up to join TIG? I'm assuming Nick Bowles wouldn't be one of them, possibly.
Nick is an interesting decision. I'm not quite. I'll need to chat to him when I next see him. I don't see him coming in our direction. It's almost like he's hinting he wants to find another Conservative home somewhere. He just doesn't want to be in his own seat. I'm not quite sure I understand all his logic there.
Yes, it does have that look about it. You're right. It's like he's fallen out with the local party.
Yeah. If you know, the Conservative Whip will have, then I'm happy to stay, but just not in Grantham. So whether there's another dynamic at play there, I'm not sure. But in terms of the general question, are other MPs wanting to join us? Yes, there are. There are an awful lot on the Labour side and on the Tory side as well, who are growing increasingly disillusioned with how their parties are behaving, principally on Brexit, but other issues too. And I think the next few weeks, as the Brexit drama, I mean, it doesn't conclude, but when we come through the immediate drama, if you like, I can see them coming in our direction. And we're also having conversations at a national level with the Lib Dems in terms of what that means for both of us going forward. And I suspect there'll be something that we work out there.
Yes, that would seem to make sense. Well, thank you very much. We'll be watching with interest to see what happens, A, over Brexit over the next few days, weeks, months, and also to the Independent Party, of course, to see what happens there. Thank you. Thank you very much for speaking to me today.
No problem at all. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you very much, Heidi. And that was Heidi Allen, MP for South Cambridgeshire. When she was speaking about the technology that people have to put up with when they're trying to receive any kind of benefits at the moment, it did remind me of the film I, Daniel Blake. And if you haven't seen that film, I highly recommend that you do have a look at it. It's really, really good.